I'm Tracy Swedlow, and editor-in-chief of Television Nation and Interactive TV Today, and a bunch of other things, and of course our producer of the TV of Tomorrow show and TVOT Connect. I am absolutely thrilled to have someone that we've never had on here before, and his name is Phil Savinick, who I have known for a long time, but we are compatriots because we have a love for Philo Farnsworth, who is the inventor of electronic television, which happened this week, September 7th, 1927. Phil, however, is doing all kinds of amazing things and has a huge television background that I think he'll delight you with, because he's been involved in the creation of television content for a long time himself and is busy putting together a documentary. So, Phil, welcome to the show. Really thrilled you're here.
Thank you for having me on. We're compatriots. We are televisionaries or vidiots, depending on how people feel about it. But I know I've been watching TV all of my life. Or as I like to say, the first third of my life, I watched it. The second third, I made television programs. Then the last third, I've been using television as a subject for art and films and all of the things that I wanted to do when I was done working. So I've had a great opportunity to make art about television, to make films about television, to have amassed a television collection. And as you can see, we're in the same club. So all of your viewers out there who love television, yes, I went into the cave with the match first. And of course, the obvious question would come up, do you know who invented television? And I have to admit, up until a certain age, I just assumed Encyclopedia Britannica wouldn't lie. It must have been Vladimir Zworykin. And then I found out, no, actually, that was sort of corporate propaganda. And the real guy was a 14-year-old farm boy from Rigby, Idaho, named Philo Farnsworth. And he came up with the idea for electronic television before he'd even been to high school. He was plowing a field and he looked at the lines, well, hour after hour after hour, and he began to see images made up of lines. And he realized, oh, if I could train an electron to do what my horse does, I could send pictures through the air. Well, that was somebody I wanted to find out about, because that's too amazing a story to believe, really. So later in life, I used to do a lot of documentaries about television, because who better to watch television than I? And I worked on the Emmy Awards a half a dozen times. And one year, they were...
What were you doing for the Emmy Awards?
I would do the clips. So, you know, people would come up and they'd give an award, and then everybody would yawn. And then we'd run some really exciting clips of TV past, great duets or comedic moments or the funniest ladies on television. And then everybody would spark right back up for another 100 awards. So I would do the clips for the Emmys.
And a quick question for you. Wait, before you go into that, like, obviously there weren't, there was no interactive internet library or digital, you know, recall. So you're using time code or something. I mean, I can't even imagine what you would have to do to find those clips. Like, you know, I mean, that's a whole show in itself, I'm sure.
I have to preface that by saying there were no computers. You couldn't look up anything. You called people. You read books. You haunted the Academy Library, or even worse, a video store that might have some old film that you might need. We would get... The studios were very cooperative and we would get help, you know, if we were doing the history of CBS or something. But no, there were no computers in those days. We would write down little time code numbers so that we could find it again. But basically, there was no database. Each show had a book that syndication of every episode. Other than that, you couldn't even find what was in every show. There literally was nowhere to go. So it was much more difficult.
I always enjoy those clips. So thanks.
it was the greatest job ever. And then on, when we would do the shows, we'd invite all the old stars to be on them, you know, and introduce their clips. And that was sort of how I fell in love with all these TVs, was we'd rent these TVs and we'd run the clips on it. And I'd go, I love that box. So that began a whole different thing. But we did a show for what was then the Museum of Television and Radio called The Funny Ladies of Television. And
the one in, is that the one in Toronto or which one?
Pardon?
Which, where is that? Is that the one in Toronto or somewhere else?
Museum of Television and Radio was originally in New York, and then there was a branch in L.A. And now they're currently called the Paley Institute for Media. So it has a different mission. They took the word museum out of it. But when they were launching and fundraising, we could get all of the stars to come. So we would do a clip package on Lucy, and Carol Burnett would come and talk about her friend Lucy. And Mary Tyler Moore was our hostess, and Lily Tomlin was on the show, and Betty White was on the show. And then we invited people in the audience. A thrill for me, Gail Storm was there. I hadn't seen Gail Storm since I'm 5 years old, sitting on my mother's rug watching the TV. She was like a gigantic star to me, but she was to the others too, or Marjorie Lord. So I got to all this watching of TV I did when I was little, suddenly became a career. And
I used to take my mother's little black and white TV, which I still have from a long time ago, and sneak it into my bedroom late at night and watch TV instead of, you know, going to sleep before school. I used to sit and watch very late night TV under the sheets.
Perfect. I actually, when I, one day you'll come down to Los Angeles, we'll do a tour of my half-assed TV museum, and I have a whole row of TVs that are, you're able to watch under the covers.
Okay,
so
thanks.
I'm not on the camera now, but when you come down, we'll do a tour. I also have the TV that mother said, don't sit so close, you'll go blind. These are
right, my grandpa did that all the time to me. He would admonish me, don't sit so close, you'll go blind. So tell me more, after the Emmys, what did you do? Because you've done so many projects.
What was the question?
After the Emmys, what did you do?
The Emmys went on for years and years. So early on, I did television specials. And then I did home videos. I was at Disney 17 years. Then I was at HBO for seven doing comedies and the history of HBO and things like that. Then at the end, all the only kind of entertainment on TV were award shows. So I worked on the Oscars, the Emmys, the Grammys, where I would do the clips. And then at a certain point, I hit my time for the bucket list. And I thought, okay, if I didn't have a sponsor, if I wasn't getting paid, what do I still have in the tank? What would I like to do? And that's where these other films have come in. One of which is this remarkable project that we have about Philo Farnsworth.
What's the plan?
I'm going to probably get that year wrong, but I think it was 2003. They were going to do some tribute on the Emmys to Tom Sarnoff regarding the invention of television. And I said to the producer, Gary Smith, I have nothing against Tom Sarnoff, but he wasn't even born when TV was invented.
He's the son of David Sarnoff.
Yeah. Pam Farnsworth not only was alive, she was there in the room. And when her husband pointed a camera at a human for the first time, who do you think he pointed it at? Her. Why don't you invite her? So they flew her out to Hollywood and they invited her to the Emmys. And they did a little tribute to Philo and then gave this award to Tom Sarnoff.
I was there at that Emmys.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I went behind, as a journalist for what I do here, I was able to go behind the scenes and I met Pam and interviewed her there. And she was in a wheelchair. Yeah. And it was a huge, huge moment, for me.
Well, I stalked her because I wanted to meet her. She was the only one of all the stars I wanted to meet. And she wasn't hard to stalk because she was in the wheelchair. She couldn't run away from me.
Yeah, so but it made me upset that she did not get a standing ovation when Colin, what's his name? The comedian with the red hair. Oh, my God. When Conan O'Brien, thanks. when he introduced her as being the first face on electronic television, which she is, right? And all the work that she did with her husband contributed to this whole experience, you know? And I don't think people understood that. And then, of course, they panned to Tom Sarnoff, who stood up.
Yeah, well, that's the way that kind of worked. But no, she was acknowledged, though. She was there. And the funniest story was I finally found her by the ladies' room. She was out in the hallway. And I got down on a knee because she was in the wheelchair. And I thanked her for being the mother of television. And I gave her one of my pins. And we had this lovely chat. And every star who would walk out of the ladies' room, I would introduce Pam Farnsworth like we were best friends. By the way, Glenn Close, did you know that she's the mother of television? Well, her husband invented it, but when he pointed at it, it needed a human to point it at. She was the first person ever televised. And Glenn Close got down on her knee and kissed Mrs. Farnsworth's hand and said, without you, none of us would have any careers.
That's right. But that's what, isn't that what, was it not Jack Barry? Who was the host of I've Got a Secret? He said the same thing on that old show where Philo turns up and, you know, nobody knows who he is.
I escorted the family to the Academy of Television Hall of Fame when Farnsworth was inducted. And there was a sportscaster who was being inducted the same night named Al Michaels. And when he got up there, he said, if it weren't for Philo Farnsworth, I'd be celebrating my 50th anniversary in the insurance business.
When I'm interviewing people on Zoom and our theater people, like, because I talk with a lot of theater people too, but I say we would not have Zoom. We would not have the experience we're recording right now unless he had done what he had done. Do you know what I mean? It would, well, maybe eventually, but it's a direct, there's a direct line from that, from what he did to this moment right now.
I absolutely feel that anytime anyone creates an electronic image on their phone or broadcasts an electronic image, who made the first electronic image was this, well, at that time he was 21 years old and living in San Francisco. So on Green Street, his lab is still there. And, you know, nobody could believe, I mean, listen, in Russia, in England, in Germany, all these, in Japan, all these scientists are working on television. A lot of them have unlimited corporate backing. A 21-year-old in a lab he built himself actually transmits the first electronic image. It was startling. It was earth-shattering. So that's the story I began to pursue. But as I befriended the family, I realized that, unfortunately, although the way the patents were supposed to work, they would get a royalty on every television sold. The patents had a 17-year expiration date in those days. So his patents had expired because of the war and the legal battles with RCA, and everybody got to use his technology for free. And they had basically, he died, you know, penniless, drunk, and disillusioned with the whole world. And so as I met the family, that was the general vibe. That was the curse was, you know, I met his son, Kent. We spent a lot of time, you know, conversing and communicating. And there was always this feeling, oh, we've been cheated. So as time went on, it just occurred to me, this isn't right. I mean, his dad invented television, for God's sake, and they're looking to see if they have money to buy food for the weekend. So I purchased the contents of the inventor's basement. So when you come to, we have holiest relics of TV here. The family got to eat. We got to preserve everything and catalog it and display it. Some of it is on permanent display at the MZ TV Museum in Canada. They now have a whole Philo Farnsworth exhibit. But we were able to preserve everything and just nudge history a little bit in the right direction and get some money for the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren who he never knew. And when we gave them the money from the sale in Toronto, we said, use it for some educational purpose. The 14-year-old boy standing in the field did not have access to books, did not have access to knowledge. That was his dream. He finished high school, but couldn't finish college because his father died. And he had so many brothers and sisters to support. He said, well, I guess I just should go invent television now. So he never had the degrees. He never had the diversity of having an education, which actually hurt him later in life, where people wouldn't take him seriously because he didn't have degrees. So we made sure the great-grandchildren went to STEM camp. And one of the granddaughters always wanted to study physics. And one of the granddaughters was rebuilding his laboratory in Maine that had burned down in a forest fire. So the power and the energy of what he had done back in the 20s is nourishing the family in these 20s. So that's really the project has been, yes, we're doing a wonderful film and we've done events, and but we also kind of have said thank you to the man who invented it all. He started the Television Nation without even knowing he was doing it.
Nicely said. Tell me a little bit more about the project. What state are you in? Are you going to be able to, is it going to be a mini series? Do you think you'll get it on one of the streamers?
Well,
I know it's a challenging story to get out the door, but I think historical figures like this would be of great interest to people. There are a lot of these types of, limited series out there.
Well, it's the 100th anniversary of television in 2027. We have a mini series ready, but that's a big deal, a multi-part. We put it into 8 parts and none of them are boring. Oh yeah, there's the time he meets Einstein, or when the Hitler tries to kidnap him, or then he invents a nuclear reactor for your house. It is an unbelievable story, but in all honesty, it doesn't have a lot of sex or death. I mean, they're Mormons, it doesn't have that titillation that TV wants. You have a lot of viewers, you have a lot of people in the television business. We're ready for the miniseries, but it's been a very hard sell. Because it's, obviously there are tragedies. Obviously there are personal, nobody lost more than him. Nobody won more than him. I mean, it is an unbelievable emotional story. But again, when you're talking 8 hours or 6 hours of a movie, that's a very expensive and big endeavor. If somebody would like to help celebrate the 100th anniversary of television, we're ready. We're prepared. We'd love to meet with them. In the meantime,
you could probably dig into Sarnoff's life as far as extramarital relationships, if he had them and things like that.
Well, you could always spice it up, of course. And everyone was human.
Who knows?
But right. I just think about Netflix. Oh, lots of sex, lots of violence. What is it that's going to immediately attract people? And this is a story. It's a love story on the cutting edge of technology and invention. It's a very exciting time. It's a great story. It just, again, we don't kill anybody. It's like not that kind of, yes, when the forest fire comes and they escape by, 2 minutes in the back of a station wagon and they watch everything he's worked on explode, that's as good as an action movie. But
working on Fusion, and he was the person who started all of that work, right? And don't you have an old notebook that he burned the contents of from his work on Fusion?
I did. If we're on video, I did want to show you the holiest relic of television. This is his original book of where he wrote and logged every experiment. It says Farnsworth Television Journal number 1, 1927. Now, the reason that the stickers are on it, this was evidence in the case against RCA.
Wow.
No way a 21-year-old could invent television. Farnsworth said, here's the tube, here's the book. Where's your tube? Where's your book? They didn't have one. So basically, this is what won him the battle. I'm going to let Kevin find September 7th for me. This is the other.
Wasn't the what about the drawing from Justin Tolman?
Well, I got that too. You see if you give me. Oh, I
might
you
have
have
the original. You have the original.
No, nobody has.
Unbelievable.
Nobody has the original. But this was the drawing that Justin Tolman brought to court to show not only could a 21-year-old do it, this is what the 15-year-old drew for me in class. The camera was like a jar with a lens at one end, an optical.
So like a cathode ray tube? Mm-hmm.
That was his drawing of a cathode ray tube, first camera. So he drew it on the blackboard when he was 15, and he had it in his notebooks. And he left his teacher, high school science teacher, a copy of the drawing. Now, when the trial got really heavy with RCA, the lawyers asked him, is there any chance that you told anybody about your invention? And it's in the middle and it's dated.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, I did give a drawing to my teacher. They tracked down Mr. Tolman, his high school science teacher, who had saved the drawing, who brought it to court to say, no, pretty much a 14-year-old did come up with this idea. Now, the way history works, it was inadmissible as evidence because it wasn't dated. However, the judge knew the teacher wouldn't lie. So he won the case against RCA. So every place along the story, there are these amazing stories, but a 14-year-old who had not been to high school comes up with the idea for television. That to me is the big wow.
Would you mind bringing on Kevin? Because I'd have a question for him as well, please.
I do, and one more thing I want to show you before I surrender my chair.
Yeah.
This is his page from September 7th, 1927, the day that he invented television. And when he was there, he said, let me read it for you.
Oh, man.
I should have memorized it by now. The received line picture was evident this time. So basically, they put a slide in on an angle, they turned the slide. The received picture was evident, and that was his comments on inventing television.
I'm getting verklempt here.
And I can send you a JPEG of it if you want to use it in your podcast. But okay, yes, we have saved the holiest relics of television. Kevin, I will change chairs with you.
Oh, I'm right here.
All right.
Well, I wanted to bring Kevin on as well because he's your producer for your mini series, and I want to make sure that people realize, you know, it's a real project and with real support behind it. So Kevin, welcome to Television Nation.
Thank you for having me.
I know, Phil, we could spend a billion hours also talking about all your work and your beautiful paintings, which are all TV oriented and everything, but I want to ask Kevin, like, how did you realize that this would be a great project for you to shepherd? And, you know, why are both of you so passionately attracted to this story? And why do people need to hear this? I mean, maybe we've already discussed that. I mean, I know why, but why do you think so?
It's being able to experience what that would be like to actually come up with that sort of an idea, that sort of a world-changing concept, and then make it happen is incredibly inspiring. And in a world where we need that sort of innovation and invention to help us move forward into our future in a way that would be safe and secure, it's incredibly important for us to encourage young people to know that this is possible, that their crazy idea could be the one that saves the world.
Okay, I'm getting verklempt again. That was very well said. And Phil, you want to answer the same question? I mean, why did you become obsessed with this story? Why do you feel this story needs to be told now?
Well, I think as we come up on the 100th anniversary of television, which would be September 7th, 2027, it's worth a taking a moment to just nod our cap to the man who started it all. He's the forgotten genius. He's the most famous man that nobody's ever heard of. He basically, at 21, came up with an invention that changed the world. And a few years later, he's completely forgotten. A sideline, you know, a footnote, an asterisk. So, you know, just, again, being at a place where I could do things that inspired me or that I was passionate about, it seemed like I had an opportunity to say thank you to this guy. And in a demonstrative way, okay, we'll save your stuff. We'll save your family. We'll nudge history in the right direction. Okay, let's do it.
It seems like it's important to remember what inspired Philo T. Farnsworth to invent television in the first place. And part of what inspired him was the fact that at the time, his beloved older brothers were in Europe fighting World War I at a time when there were no news reports from Europe telling us what was going on. There was no way to see. There was no way to communicate instantaneously as there is now. And there was a world war raging. They called it World War I afterwards when we knew there was going to be a two. At the point, it was the Great War. The entire world was on fire. And Farnsworth believed that if only all of us could see how other people that we don't know live, if we could connect in that way and understand their lives more clearly, maybe we wouldn't have to be fighting each other. Maybe we would understand that we are all one. And that was what he wanted, was he wanted the safe return of his older brothers. And he believed the way to do that was by uniting us through communication and through being able to understand each other. And that was his goal. That was what he wanted television to be, was the great uniter.
And Go ahead, Phil.
No, the irony is that when television was launched and he was no longer a part of its development or distribution or profits, he was very disgusted with what television had become. It was wrestling and beer commercials. And he wouldn't turn it on in his house and he wouldn't let his children watch it. He said, there's nothing there that should be a part of your intellectual diet. So on July 20th, 1969, his wife said, well, can we turn it on? He said, okay, turn the damn thing on. And the first image they saw on the television said live television pictures from the moon. And she turned to him and she said, well, Phil, was it all worth it? And he said, I think so. But up to this moment, I wasn't so sure. So he did ultimately unite the world using his invention. It just didn't happen in the way that he envisioned it, didn't happen in the way that it should have happened. But there he was with a billion people all sharing that experience. And that was his moment.
What Pym didn't know at the time, because he'd had to keep it secret, was that he'd been consulted by NASA about what kind of camera should be sent on that first moon landing. And what they used was a model that was very much based on his original design because it was so simple and durable. That's why the pictures were black and white.
Yeah, there was nothing that could break. They could adjust the contrast and brightness from Earth. It basically was just your basic black and white video camera because it had to work 100%. And they trusted that original design more than some of the new, more advanced ones. There was nothing to break.
Well, what's the name of the series and what can we do to get the word out? I mean, you have to imagine the people who are watching this podcast are also innovators. They're also pioneers, you know, or people involved in the running of the TV industry. These are people who are all obsessed also with television. So what will be the name of this series?
The series,
because he picked up the name.
Title of the series is Fire of Genius. And the reason we chose Fire of Genius is it's actually a quote from Abraham Lincoln, who, as we remember, as well as being a president, was also a lawyer and was also an inventor and was a key player in creating patent law, because he believed that by allowing the inventor to enjoy the profits from their invention for a specific period of time, that was igniting the fire of genius and flaming those fires so that people would be inspired and motivated to invent. So it's called Fire of Genius.
I did not know that. That's a really nice connection. It's beautiful. And what's the name of your company, Kevin?
TV is okay.
Okay, great. And Phil, show us your paintings or something, because you're not only doing all of these projects, but you're thinking about it all the time. Just behind you, these are all your paintings and pieces. And
all right, I can camera and turn it around if that's what you're asking.
I'm going to come in there and give a hand. I'll be right there.
Okay. All right.
Let's see. I do that. I believe now you're seeing. So here is part of our Farnsworth Shrine. That's where the logbook goes. And there's his, there's the first camera that ever photographed a human.
Wow.
And he pointed it at Pem. There's his card from high school. Oh, no, that's not there. No, I missed.
There's stamps.
That's his high school registration card right after he came up with the big idea. He had to go, he finally got into high school. And of course, these were the stamps. He got his picture on a stamp. He's there in the lower
finally.
Corner. But Pim said it was the stamps that were the most meaningful to her because of who he was with. He's with Steinmetz.
Edwin Armstrong. Look at that.
And Tesla and
Armstrong.
Armstrong. So they were all the inventors
FM.
Who didn't get money. They just invented things. They changed the world, but didn't get the money.
Well,
and a collection of his camera tubes. So that's what I have here. And when the family came, I built a little shrine to Philo Farnsworth. And up there is one of his experimental tubes. And I did a little painting of him. And then it became religious because it's a shrine. So there are the Virgin's hands praying for control of the remote. And this was from our exhibit in Canada. Because he was plowing a potato field, they made Philo fries. And of course,
I heard it was beets as well. I never
another shrine
beets or,
to the famous Dr. Farnsworth. So I made these. Here, I can get you a better picture, is a picture of me and Pam. When I contacted her son, he said, I know who you are. I have a picture of you. I didn't have a camera. They did. She took a picture of me. So I'm there on my knee introducing everybody to the mother of television. So I went to art school. And so when I began to work and I realized I couldn't, you know, paint as much, I said, if I even do one a year, let's do them about television. So this
That's
one, all the things are coming out of the television, and our nuclear family is, of course, watching. I have some television memorabilia. That, believe it or not, is the hat Mary Tyler Moore tossed in the air.
Wow.
Nice, because we hired her, we made the hat, she threw it in the air, she never picked it up. And a Mouseketeer ears signed by Annette and Cubby. So I do have, there's a gigantic camera here. How did this get here? That's one of the NBC early color cameras. And they were giving it away, and it ended up in my house. So here is part of my TV collection. I love the space age sets, you know, of the 60s and 70s. And then began to work my way back to, you know, the historical collection. And as I promised, here are some more of the paintings. And the nuclear family. And
they're almost really sculptures. They're bas-relief. Like,
yeah, they
sculpture.
Are 3D. You're absolutely right. Now, this one, I'm going to go. I assume you'll edit my walking. This one was called The Birth and Death of Television. Because over here is the mechanical television of Baird. And then the image dissector. And then the first TV from the World's Fair. and the cameraman.
That was translucent, that thing.
Everybody's watching together. And then we just get this plethora of programming. There's Our Lady of the Cathode Ray Tube. Of course, I do TV and religion, same thing. And out come all these programs, and they inundate us. And then TV starts to fly away. And then they're not watched. The ghost of TV. And finally, kids are sitting in front of the TVs, but they'd rather play on their phones. So this one is The Birth and Death of Television. And
but I would argue that watching video on mobile devices is still television.
Half the people are watching from cable or broadcast, and the rest are all watching it on something else. This is the magic land between the channels, where all the characters get to visit. Now this is my favorite, at least. So what do we think that family is watching? What do you think that red thing is? It's a toilet seat.
The red thing? Oh, you're right. Look at that.
And inside the toilet seat, it says,
realize. Realize, so realize.
Realize, wow. Realize, realize. And so that was my commentary on television in the, what are we in now? The aughts, the teens, the 20s. This was Godzilla on The Tonight Show. So, yes, I have fun with it. Now, also, again, it's a story for another time, but here's one of Farnsworth's nuclear reactors. He thought every house and every car and every boat and planes should all have their own nuclear hydrogen reactor. Of course, water is made up of oxygen and hydrogen, so the byproduct would be water. He had great ideas. And again, when he found out that this could theoretically be stolen from him by corporate America, he dismantled his lab and went home. I actually have one of the Farnsworth TV sets here.
Wow.
And when his sons were here, we opened it up and they went in the back. They touched everything. And there you can see it says Farnsworth.
The Farnsworth TV.
Okay.
Beautiful.
And then just as a coup de grace, I have one of the mechanical TVs here. They were mostly handmade, and they had this spinning disc and a neon light. And you watched
Amazing.
It with a little viewer that was set up here in front. And you'd look in a little tiny screen and see shadows moving around.
Is that a Logie Baird? Is that a Logie Baird?
Song,
World of Tomorrow.
Now, this is one of RCA sets from the World's Fair. And I'm sorry about that. From the World's Fair. And the tube was so long, it couldn't sit against the wall. So they had to face it up and have you watch out of a mirror. But basically, there is the program from the World's Fair. I mean, you can come up with your own adjectives, but if you want to borrow it, you're welcome to it. And this is the magazine they gave out at the Pavilion of Television when RCA
introduced
their new invention, which, of course, we know was not their new invention. But, and of course, TV at the World's Fair was a flop, which is also really disappointing. They steal the idea. They get all this publicity. This set was, I think, $400 when you could buy a car for $400. And there was nothing on it. I mean, they only broadcast maybe 2 hours twice a week. So basically, it was a lot of money for very, very little. We'll go through some more art later. But here again is... I used to tell people if I painted in the 18th century, I would do seascapes or landscapes, but now I do TV-scapes.
You need to show these pieces at our conference.
Okay, when you're ready, we'll do a show up there at your conference.
That'd be great. I would love that.
Oh, I'm coming down. Sit down.
Okay. Well, okay. I think
I haven't done that on the camera because I destroyed our entire tripod.
And I love that astronaut version TV, the red one and behind you. That's a great one.
Yeah. And it was rebuilt so it can broadcast in color. So we would use it on the sets because the playback would be perfect. Whereas if you ran it on the real old ones, there's always a rolling vertical line, you know, horizontal hold something. So this was dependable. Like
you
I
know,
said,
I,
boxes. Yeah.
Now, some people in this podcast watching this will remember this, but if you probably, I don't know if you are aware of something called the vertical blanking interval, which was the data. Do you remember? Yeah. I mean, I think that was something probably Philo would have understood, and it was something that was important for the origins of interactive TV because it was extra lines, I guess, they were able to use to send data through, and that was one of the moments where interactive television was being invented. And that's kind of, I was covering all that when that happened. And the people watching this podcast were inventing that, were utilizing that unused spectrum or unused lines. I can't actually remember now. But so it's like these people who are watching this podcast are part of the same continuum, you know, and trying to bring his vision to
life. Of NTSC broadcasting. And it had to do with how much you were actually seeing on TV and how much was hidden. I think that went away when they went to digital, but your viewers would know better. Everything changed in about 2001 or whenever it was when everything went digital. So now they become sculptures instead of TV sets.
I know. But we are all still part of this history, and the people watching, as I said, are hopefully will appreciate everything that you're doing, because keeping this legacy alive, you and Kevin, and the passion that you obviously display is so heartwarming for me. And I'm sure everybody watching here probably really appreciates this, because you know, we can't all collect our memories together and history, and you're doing a big mitzvah, Phil. This is
well,
huge.
We also
get
a website for all the TV lovers, all the televisionaries, and all the videos. It's called thehistoryoftv.com. We have a virtual tour of the Farnsworth exhibit. We have lots of videos. We even have a virtual tour of my museum where you can see all the TV sets in 3D. So actually, we are beginning to save some of this stuff and make it accessible to everybody. So thehistoryoftv.com. And you'll get to see a lot of the films we did, The Day TV Was Born, The Mother of Television, The Big Idea, are all on there in much more detail. And they'll be part of the documentary we're working on. And the reason we're doing the documentary is it's under our control. And even that's quite a story, because I don't know anybody who nudges history. I mean, supposedly if the crocodile's coming out to eat the little cub, you can't honk your horn and say, run away. But we did. We said, you know what? History just wasn't quite right. It certainly wasn't right to these people. Let's see what we can do to kind of nudge it in the right direction. So thehistoryoftv.com is a good place, good resource. And if anybody's got collections of things or know where we can set up a museum, we're certainly willing to donate items, whatever it is, because we want to keep the stories alive.
All right. Well, thank you very, very much. Myself, I'm deeply appreciative. And of course, we'll see what happens in the future. Hopefully you'll get your piece out, you and Kevin. I know he's in the background. I'm working on a piece too, but it's not a documentary per se, but another time.
We're going to read your musical. Absolutely.
Okay. I don't want to say anything. But
on to thehistoryoftv.com, there's going to be a lot of information you probably won't know. And lots of pictures and things that will probably inform what you're doing.
Bill, I think I have spent a lot of time on your site. I have a lot of time. It's been very helpful. Thank you so much for doing something good for humankind. And Philo would, you know. Phil, Philo. I never know what to do with that.
So I've got Philo Farnsworth the Fourth. He's one of the beneficiaries of this energy that we transported from the 1920s. He's now in his second week of college. So we are transporting this energy from the past. We're planning it in the future, and we'll see what Philo Taylor Farnsworth IV comes up with.
All right, sounds great. Thank you so much for sharing your experience with me. I really appreciate it.
And if you need anything else, I'll put on the same shirt.
Okay. Don't click off. I want to tell you one more thing, but I only have 3 more minutes. I got to go. Thank you so much, Kevin, out there, Kevin Miller, who is the producer of the documentary for TVO's OK, and Phil Savnik, TV extraordinaire, TV televisionaire. That's all I can say. Thank you so much. I'm Tracy Swedlow. This is Television Nation. We love Philo, and thanks so much for doing what you did. This is the 96th anniversary of the invention of electronic television. Take care. Have a good day. Cut.